This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing, my chance to talk with artists, policymakers, and performers, to hear their stories, what inspires their creations, what decisions changed their careers, what relationships influenced their work. If the fashion world were a kingdom, Grace Coddington would be queen. The English model turned Vogue fashion editor, creative director, and stylist has been telling stories through clothes since age 18. Born in 1941 on a small island in the north of Wales, Grace Coddington moved to London as a teenager. With electric red hair, she became a model and took the fashion world by storm, landing on the cover of British Vogue in 1962, where 6 years later, she'd begin her editorial career as a junior fashion editor. Eventually, Coddington ended up at American Vogue, where she spent more than 25 years as its creative director. For a master of style, Grace Coddington's own aesthetic may surprise you.
Well, I'll start off with how I dress. I don't wear jeans and things like that. I just wear black. But I have a reason for that. I mean, what? I have several reasons. Right now, I'm a little bit older, I'm a little bit fatter, and black looks better on fatter, older people because they makes them look slim and young.
Because it shades you.
Yeah. But the other reason is that I spend my whole life with clothes and looking at clothes and judging clothes and considering clothes and making clothes form into a story or something like that. So I want to have a kind of clean palette on myself. So that's...
It's almost distracting.
Yeah, it's distracting. I mean, I don't want to think too much about what I'm putting on in the morning. I mean, that said, I do change. There's an infinitesimal difference between now and, you know, 5 years ago, where maybe the pants were a little bit wider, a little bit narrower, or the sweater was a little bit tighter, or a little bit, you know. And I wear the black version of today rather than the black version of 5 years ago. So, but you asked, like, who wears fashion?
What kind of people? Well, because I'm ignorant. Let me just add the interject that I'm ignorant because I assume there are people who wake up and obviously they have a budget and they go to places that make clothes that are smart clothes that don't cost as much money. And then there's people who go and buy very simple clothes and they, you know, get a nice blazer and then it's all Banana Republic khaki pants and white button-down shirts and some little menu of ties. Their options are very, if you're not wearing a uniform to work, let's say.
Right.
And then there's people who have limitless resources and can buy anything out there in the world that they want in the world of fashion. And I'm wondering, are you only making your clothes for them?
No, I think it's my efforts are supposed to be to inspire, you know, to inspire people. And I'm hoping that people will not just copy a designer's look, you know, piece for piece. I'm hoping that they will actually put their own personality into it, you know. And I think, you know, when it gets to the magazine, you show it in lots of different ways rather than just the way it came down the runway, because otherwise, everybody really would kind of be dressed the same and it would be embarrassing. If you're just wearing black, people don't notice that it's the same. I think that there is a very sort of ostentatious way of dressing that is not the kind of look that I admire. But I do like people that have fun with it. You know, fashion is something to have fun with, I think.
You believe that?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You know,
for those that have the resources.
Resources in the body.
Right.
Well, I mean, actually, a lot of people have fun who don't have the body, and sometimes that's okay because they've learned to deal with it, you know. But
they've compensated
but,
somehow.
You know, what I don't like to see is people that are a little older than they should be wearing, you know, let's say a very short skirt or something that's...
For the young.
Then, yeah.
So you have those delineations in your mind. That's for the young.
Yes, but
You're straining to look young.
Yeah, you shouldn't. I mean, you should be the age you are. It's nothing wrong with any age, even as old as me. You know, it's okay.
Well, it's funny how you say that because, I mean, I have
simple and a very short, I mean, an almost, you could write it on the back of a napkin list of my fashion do's and don'ts for men. And whenever I see grown men with a baseball cap on backwards, I want to go, oh, no.
Oh, I whip it
off. You look like
head.
An idiot. Men straining to look boyish.
Yeah, that's
jeans.
It's the same. Women straining to look, you know, younger than they
but
are.
But I expect that more from women.
Yeah?
Meaning that women are constantly being abused, if you will, by the notion that as they get older, they're less desirable. They're not as, you know, young and beautiful, and men trading in their wives for younger women.
But with men, I don't understand it. If they worry about it all the time, then they're never going to feel comfortable in their own skin. And I think that's such a shame. I mean, I'm a great one for not believing in plastic surgery and things, you know.
You were born in Wales.
Yes.
And you grew up, you were born and raised on the island in Wales?
Yes, I didn't even come off the island for a very long time.
What? You live on an island now.
It's an island often, yeah, but it was, well, no, actually, the island I was born on was probably about the size of Manhattan, but that was off another island, so it was, you know,
quite remote. What was the name of the island in Wales?
The island I was born on was called Holy Isle, and that's off another island called Anglesey.
Where is that? What part of the country?
Way North Wales.
North Wales. Yeah.
Right off the tip.
And you left the island when you were how old?
I think I left when I was about 17, 18. 18, I guess.
To go to university?
Oh, no, please. No.
No.
No, I'm totally uneducated.
You have no education?
No, I have no education. No, I went to school until I was like 17 and a half or something.
Did you graduate high school?
Pass on that.
That's the beauty of the show. People bear their souls on this show.
I know. That's why I'm joking, actually. I got scripture and art, yes. I went to a convent, and it took me several times taking it, and I got scripture and art. I'm very, very, very nervous when taking an exam, and I would sit down at the exam, and I put my pen to paper, and I just simply couldn't write a word. So I failed all my exams. You know, I was just like rigid with nerves. I'm a bit like that talking to people too. So
you are.
I warn you. Yeah,
that's fine. That's fine.
You know, I'm a little bit better now than I was a couple of years ago.
So when you're there, you have how many siblings in your family?
I had one sister.
And a sister. And your parents, older. What did your dad do for a living on the island?
My parents ran a small hotel.
They did?
Right by the beach. It was really lovely. It was kind of a holiday hotel that was only open in the summer months.
A lot of tourism there in the summer?
Well, you know, by Long Island standards, no. But by, I guess, North Wales standards, yes.
So they had a business?
They had a business. They had this little family hotel, yeah, that was right practically on the beach, very small. I think about 20 people could stay there.
Was fashion, clothing, I mean, I have only the most tired images in my mind of was your mother into clothing or someone in your family, or was it Barbie or some doll, whatever the equivalent was? There was no Barbie back then.
My mother was, I think, very kind of fashionable in, you know, my grandmother was an opera singer. I wish I could sing. I wish I got something from her, but I didn't. They had a sort of huge house on one side of the island, and then and my father came from Derbyshire, which is northern-ish England. And they met, and then they ran this hotel. And my mother was, all the pictures I see of her in her youth, she was very chic. But she used to make a lot of her clothes, because I think there weren't too many shops there that sold high fashion. So she knitted a lot, and she made her own clothes, and she always looked amazing that I remember.
I mean,
she wore suits and things, although they, you know, it's way in the country, and It was very dressed up. But it was that period, I suppose, in the 40s when people dressed up.
They were more conscious of
they
that.
They didn't wear jeans.
It wasn't as casual.
I don't think jeans existed in those days.
Well, with cowboys, maybe, on the American West.
Yeah.
Herding sheep, maybe. But I think all of us have, I mean, even when I was young, you know, my dad said to me when I was going to, I was going to graduate from high school, and I grew up with a big family, and my father was a school teacher, and he had no money, you know, and he said to me, we're going to go to a store, and we're going to buy you a suit. And I bought this three-piece suit back when people still wore three-piece suits. Yeah. I bought a three-piece suit from, it was Pierre Cardin or something like that.
Oh, right.
This was back
That's
in the 70s.
That's pretty chic, yeah.
Pierre. I mean, no, but this was a discount place. They sold discount clothing. But even I could recognize what was beautiful. When did you start to, not recognize what was beautiful, when did you start to decide you wanted to teach other people what was beautiful and dress other people? How did that begin?
Well, I think it began because when I eventually left home and went to London, I then I started modeling. So I was modeling for 10 years or so. So I was very immersed in the fashion world, obviously, there. And it was such a great time of fashion. It was the 60s. And the whole ready-to-wear thing was beginning to happen, and it happened very strongly in London. I think London was a wonderful place to be at that point. And it was, you know, then I started obviously getting older. I'm towards the end of my 20s, and other people, like other models, famous models like Twiggy came along. And so I decided that maybe I should stop with this modeling lark. And I got offered a job at Vogue. So I was
British Vogue.
Right. I was super lucky. And so that was in 1968 when I started there. So it's a way back. So I guess that's when I started telling people how to dress. I slightly used to tell people when I was modeling. It was a very different situation then to now. You know, they didn't have these huge teams of people that they have now on a shoot.
Why do you think it evolved to that? Why are there those huge teams of people now? What happened? There's so much more at stake.
So much more at stake. And time became money, you know, and everything had to be done quicker. And, you know, when I was modeling, you would go on a trip for 2 or 3 weeks. And even, you know, through the first 10 or 15 years working at Vogue, and now it's 2 days if you're lucky. And you don't get further much than L.A. because, you know, you
get
everything, because everything is so, so expensive. You know, photographers don't have the time. Models don't have the, nobody has the time.
The
so.
Models don't have the time.
No, they don't have the time.
Well, where do they need to be?
They probably need to be on the other side of the Atlantic. And that happens all the time. They go from, you know,
Paris and Milan.
Yeah.
And they want to go home.
They zip. Well, it's not even a question of going home. They barely have a home, those poor girls. You know, they literally are ripped from one airport to another and leap off a plane or expect it to look beautiful. And you have 24 hours to
shoot. Only you with any authority could say, those poor girls.
Well, I've been in that position,
speaking of
so
those beautiful
I know.
Women in the world, those poor girls.
No, you know, I've been in that position,
yes.
So I know how tough it is, even if you're 18 or whatever, to get off a plane that you've been flying for 8 hours
and feel
or something
good.
And feel fresh and
ready,
you know, and everybody looking at you and expecting. And, you know, I personally get off a flight and I feel all sort of puffy and, you know, so.
Oh, God, me too. But
we're a little older than those girls.
Yes, I am. I am.
Fortunately.
Indeed. You started at British Vogue what year?
1968.
So you're there in, how would you describe it? I only have ignorant references to like swinging London and what London was like back then.
Yeah,
what was it like?
Yeah, that was, you know, kind of full on swing. Well, it had been for a while. It was through the 60s, swinging London.
A cultural epicenter for a lot of things. Music, art, fashion.
Yeah, everything. That's what was so fantastic.
London was it.
It was all relating to fashion, you know. It was all, everything was interrelating fashion and, you know, all that pop music and things that's so great.
Well, in this country in the 60s, they shot the president, they shot his brother, and they shot Martin Luther King.
Yeah, well, that was over here.
Then they had the war in Vietnam. Yeah, that was over here. So in London, you were having a good time.
In London, we were all having a great time, and we barely heard about that, you know.
Right. I mean, and what kind of work were you doing at British Vogue?
Same as I'm doing here.
Literally?
I was a fashion editor.
You started out as a fashion editor?
I started out as a junior fashion editor, which simply meant I went a little slower than other people. And then I became a regular fashion editor. And then I was kind of the fashion editor somewhat in charge, you know, the main one there for quite some time.
And you were at British Vogue for till when?
I was there until, I think, 86.
87? I have 87. You moved from London to New York. Whose idea was that?
Calvin Klein.
Right.
well, a lot of things kind of fell into place. I'd lost my mother shortly before, so until that time, I always felt I couldn't.
Were they still in Wales?
Yeah. Yes, she was. And I had a nephew that I was bringing up, and he was like 20, so I felt I could leave. And I always wanted to come to America. Not always, but in the last of those 3 years in England, I started looking to America and what was happening here and working with American photographers, and namely Bruce Weber, actually. He's the one that kind of introduced me to this country, to the culture, to everything, really. And I became really excited with it. And I also had a boyfriend who lived here. So I was kind of looking to come here. And it was a time where the editors changed at British Vogue. And actually, Anna Winter went there as the editor. And she'd been a friend of mine for years. So that was kind of great that she came. But I just thought it was a good moment to move, and I got offered this fantastic job at Calvin Klein by Calvin.
And doing what?
I was called design director, but I wasn't designing. I was just in the design room working with all the team of people.
Mm. And when the decision for Calvin for you to come here, so you're British Vogue to working for a designer. You're out of Vogue. You're out of publishing for a while.
Right.
And how long are you with Calvin?
Not very long, because I really miss publishing. I mean, I adore Calvin. He's fantastic, and he's, you know, we're still good friends. But I really miss doing a lot of different things. And I just felt that being in the same place and working with the same person, it was just not for me. And I don't think I was doing them any favors.
How long did that last?
A year and a half.
So brief.
Yeah.
And was the Vogue operation in the U.S. had open arms for you? They were ready for you to come?
Well, what happened was, right at that time, is Anna was made editor-in-chief of
U.S.
American Vogue.
America,
so, you know, as soon as I got that news, I'm like, yay. And I called her up and said, could I have my old job back, but at American Vogue? And she said, she was like very immediate.
Welcome
she
home.
Is. I mean, I don't know
Welcome
if you know
home,
her at all, but
I've met her
she's
a few
fantastic
times. I don't know her,
because
yeah.
She's, you know, she doesn't dither around. She's very decisive. And
no kidding.
She immediately said, yeah, I'm starting on Monday. Do you want to start with me? So I did.
Oh, it timed out when she was crossing over. You were going to walk in the door with her.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And that was close to 1990.
Yeah. It was
89.
88, I think.
88.
Yeah.
I'm not interested, truly, and I'm loath to talk about, she's a counterpart of yours, to talk about Anna in the way that she's scrutinized in the media and so forth, but why do you think, was Anna viewed, forget about who she is and what her contribution to this is, but was she viewed the same over there as she was in the U.S., or when Anna came over to the U.S., did a different woman emerge? Because I was invited to have dinner at her house, and I went with my wife, and she had about 20 people over to her house down there, and I was so thrilled because I really
she's
wanted
an
to
an amazing
get
to, host, right?
Yeah, it was lovely. She was lovely.
That's
and
the
you see
real
her.
Anna right. is.
Yeah.
She's incredibly warm and
she was.
She's a fantastic host and yeah. she makes everybody down to the smallest person feel, you know, important and at home and things like that. So, you know, she's this other persona that everybody seems to have about her is it's wrong. But I mean, that said, is she was the editor of Vogue, and that's a big deal thing, you know. So before you even start, as you walk in the room, that's who you're going to meet
with those responsibilities.
Yeah.
And that mantle to carry.
So, you know, I think she can be intimidating to people. I mean, I've just known her so long, so we get on really well, you know. That's not to say that I can push her around. I can't.
I was hoping you were going to say that you can. And you share with us how you do that.
We play games with each other, I think, a little bit, you know. But at the end of the day, we respect each other, but... You know, I push her as hard as I can, and she pushes me as hard as she can, you know.
That's it.
And it's a good game because, I think what comes out of it is something that's quite strong.
Coming up, Grace Coddington talks about the one group of people she won't dress. As Coddington was making fashion come off the pages of American Vogue in the late 1990s, a fictional TV character named Carrie Bradshaw was taking it to the streets.
In the very beginning, we couldn't get our hands on anything. Nobody wanted to give us a thing. Nobody. And we had a teeny, we talk about anemic, we had a tiny, tiny budget for the whole per episode. And it was about, I think, toward the end of the second or even the beginning of third season, I can't remember which, that it was Fendi that loaned us a baguette. And that was like the gateway. That was, you know, the floodwaters. Everything shifted.
To hear Sarah Jessica Parker reflect on the Sex and the City years, take a listen at heresthething.org. This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. Grace Coddington is the closest thing to fashion royalty that there is, a successful British model turned fashion editor and creative director of American Vogue for more than two decades. But beneath her porcelain skin and iconic red hair, Coddington is still a shy English girl with a dream, pushing herself and everyone around her to aim higher. Much of her work can be seen in her most recent book, Grace, The American Vogue Years.
There are our listeners can't see me do this, but I'm leafing through this book of yours. And I want to get, who's this photographer here?
Stephen Mizell.
This is Stephen Mizell. Yeah. There it is, Mizell. I mean, I look at a picture like that, which I can't describe to our listeners here, but I think...
Well, that was a whole story we did on the 20s. And actually, that's a story that... appeared in the film that kind of made people know who I was, the September issue.
Right.
And that's the story that I am fighting for one picture, which is also in the book. I printed it in the book, but it never made it in the magazine. I'm fighting to keep this picture in. And
this
Anna
one.
Is trying... No, not that one. It's another one in the same story, which it's all about the 20s. That story.
And in September issue, you're fighting to keep this
to keep this one picture
is
in.
Is it in here?
I think it's the other way. You have to thumb the other way. Okay. And
you know this
that's
book.
That's it. Okay. Yes.
So you fight to keep
I
this
was
image.
I fighting to keep this in.
Why?
And then, well, now I'm looking at it and I think, you know, maybe I shouldn't have put it in the book. I could not decide whether to put it in the book because largely everything in the book has been printed in the magazine. And it takes on, once it's been printed, it takes on another life. Somehow people recognize it, they know it, the picture becomes stronger because of it, or whatever. So it's a funny thing. If it hasn't actually been printed, usually they disappeared into no man's land. But because of the movie, And I keep holding this picture up and, you know, shouting and screaming and stamping my foot and complaining that it's been thrown out. But now as I look at it, and I look at that picture, for instance, compared to the one over the page that you were looking at before.
The two ladies.
Yeah, which is part of the same story.
Yeah.
The other picture is so much better. You know,
yeah, that's
it just
a gorgeous
is.
Picture.
It's more beautiful.
And well, there's some acting
and
involved.
Ultimately,
in
all I can say is maybe, you know, maybe Anna was right. And she
maybe Anna was right.
Maybe Anna was right when she threw it out.
There's a homogeneity of expression. All these women seem to be going through the same thing. When I connect with it, it's because I'm not into the clothing, women's
right.
clothing. I look at all this and I go, oh, that all looks... You know, I guess that turns on some kind of woman. She'd go for that. And I'm looking at the faces of these people who are obviously they're there for a reason.
Right.
Like, is there ever an idea that you're going to have clothing modeled by people and you cut the heads off and don't even bother involving the expression of a woman's face?
No, I think
it's integral
to
have that.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. And knowing
it's
that.
Really important. I mean, for me, the casting of a photograph is the most important part of it. You know.
So I see this and I go, oh, my God. Like, look at her, you know. I mean, how compelling, how strong.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing is just, it's all of one. And the colors and the lipstick and the eyes. And I'm like, oh, my God, that's just gorgeous. The Mizell that's here that I favored, the two women in the bar or whatever, the 20 shot, that was shot where?
Oh, here in New York.
And how long did it take to shoot that?
That one, well, it's always a series of pictures. It's like 12, 14 pages or something. So that... I think that was maybe a 3-day shoot.
Beautiful.
It's back a little bit, but you know, these days it's never more than 2 days. The actual picture probably took, I don't know, half an hour.
Now the obviously.
Oh, that part of the process. You know.
Well, obviously, when you're including the faces and the mask, if you will, of the model and the work you do. Are there some women you've seen over the arc of your nearly 50-year career? I mean, when was the time you walked in a room and even just to yourself said, oh, my God, look at that woman. I mean, she just really is such a creature.
Oh, it does happen.
Yeah, who?
No, it does happen.
Give me one. You said, oh, my Lord.
Well, it's probably not walking in a room. You know, I recognize the beauties from, I don't know, the runway or somewhere like that, or from other photographs maybe, but who's the most...
No, I wouldn't say most beautiful.
No, who's the newest
right.
person that I'm intrigued by? It's a young model called Natalie Westling.
Westling?
Yeah, and then everybody will say...
Is she from Wales, by the way?
No, she's not. She's American. But everybody thinks I only like her because she has a ton of red hair. So I suffer because I tend to like girls with red hair. It's just something I like about the coloring. So when a redhead person walks by, I do notice them.
Do you ever think about dressing men? And
well, I have to, particularly if you work with Bruce, you do, you know. But I usually, actually, in that case, let him dress them because he's much better at it than me.
But are the men there?
I'm incredibly bad at dressing men. It scares me to dress men. I mean, I know
why.
I don't know why. I can't. From something hanging on a hanger. See whether it's going to work on the guy or not. You know, when they're actually dressed in it, someone else has dressed them, I say they either look right or they don't. But you know, I tend to not like men to be too dressed up like a fashion
really?
Thing.
Yeah.
Really? I like them to
I'd have
be
that fantasy about,
simple.
I'd have that fantasy about Anna. I'd have a fantasy that Anna was, I'm assuming she was married, she has a daughter.
Right.
And I'd assume that if you dated Anna, it would be just, it could be potentially painful. She'd be like, oh, Frank, don't wear that shirt.
I'm not sure how she is
with her whether you get it right
or whatever. But she gets involved in how we dress men in Vogue. Of course she does.
But the men are secondary in Vogue. The men are extras and they're bit players.
Yeah, but don't tell them that.
Right. I mean, unless like it's a celebrity who gets some kind of feature in
only
there.
Celebrity men get into Vogue. We don't work with male models at all.
Not even as props standing behind other women?
No.
Well, no, truly?
True, yeah. True. If you look through all those pictures, every time
the guy you see is a famous guy.
Yeah, he's usually an actor. Actors do it better, you know, right. then
let's hope so.
Then, then I mean, better than, you know, I've worked with musicians too, but they're not used to being photographed or whatever, so it's easier to work with an actor.
Why don't you get male models in there? Why? They're used to having their picture taken.
I know they are, but they're
probably
going to
be a lot more grateful.
They're
kind
of boring, you know. That you get much more out of an actor, and there's a story to tell behind him, you know. That's always good too. I mean, we work with people who have a film that's just about to come out or whatever. You know, there's usually a
promotional.
Reason,
yeah.
You know, otherwise they would never do it because
yeah.
I don't think it's their favorite thing to do, unless they're very young. When they're very young, it's kind of fine, I guess.
The term that's used to describe the work you do typically is editor. And so how would you describe it? What is it? What does an editor do?
What do I do?
Or is it just about everything?
Yeah. We do a lot of things. I mean, editing is a small part of it. You know, you edit the clothes down to the ones that you want to photograph. And everything is around organizing a photographic shoot. So, but we also, you know, choose models and choose photographers and choose the story we want to do. So it's not just cutting things down. It's also creating things.
Who decides who's on the cover of the magazine?
Anna.
Ultimately, it's Anna.
Yeah.
But is there a powwow
it's
you
Anna,
have?
You know, for every page of the magazine, because ultimately it's done with her knowledge and obviously collaboration. So ultimately it's the editor-in-chief of the magazine that makes the final decision, but also contributes along the way. You know, we don't just do it and present it to her and she says yes or no. It's discussed all the way along at every stage.
She's collaborative about it.
Yeah.
Just as movie studios and producers and studio executives have records in which you'll talk to the guy or the woman who said, oh, we passed on Jaws. You know, we passed on Star Wars. There's regrets that they have and where they got it wrong. Even though they've had great success, they don't always get it right. And has that happened with you? I'm assuming when you've been responsible for editing so many issues.
No,
but what's an example of something you think, God, I wish I could do that over again? Something spectacular.
I mean, I think that about every shoot I do. I think, you know, when I'm packing up and we're getting back on the plane or whatever, or driving back from the studio, I wish. I say, oh, I'm just getting into, you know, I'm just on a roll now and I wish it could go on forever. And because now I know that I would have not put those shoes or not done that, or, you know, I wouldn't have done the hair like that or something like that. And maybe that would have been better. And you're always asking maybe about every shoot, you know. If you're 100% satisfied with something, it's usually not a good shoot. But you can feel good about it or bad about it, you know, so. Hopefully you feel good about it when you finish.
I want to ask you about, two things that popped to mind here. One is about Bruce. Bruce Weber, the famous photographer and filmmaker. I was delighted to get invited to Bruce's house, where I know Bruce through my brother Billy. Mm-hmm. And when my brother Billy was modeling for the first couple of years of his career, he knew Bruce and, you know, Calvin Klein ads and so
right.
forth.
And I mean, Bruce found a lot of young actors. I mean, he's amazing at how he
yeah.
hones in on those kids that are, you know, probably starting modeling because they
yeah.
can't get a job.
They have something else.
And Bruce just sees something in them. You know, there's a list as long as my arm. I'm not good at remembering names, but you know, when you look back at older pictures of his and you suddenly say, oh, my God, there's like Matt Dillon or something.
Sure, exactly.
For one.
Yeah. Bruce is such a cuddly man. He's like the cuddliest man. There's a photograph I had taken that I posted on my Instagram page of Bruce and I cuddling. We were at an opening or a premiere of something and he went, and I put my head on his shoulder, and I'm hugging Bruce. Like the moment you see Bruce,
yeah, you want to
like get on the couch
yeah.
with him and just squeeze him, and let's pop some popcorn and watch a movie. You know, he's just the most adorable man you've ever met. What is it? I'm just using him as an example, meaning what's required in the world? You'd assume the girl's the girl. She fits the clothes. She looks right. There's lights. There's a camera. What does the photographer bring that's unique?
I think, you know, each one obviously brings his own thing. I think what Bruce brought is he came in to fashion photography at a time when everything was very kind of fake and painted and, you know, it was big shoulders and tough and, the working woman kind of thing. And he broke all that and he, you know, scrubbed all the makeup off and had tousled hair and you know, preferred to photograph clothes that were vintage or that had a softness about them or a romance about them.
And you were there to witness that when he was doing that?
I was right alongside him, yes.
And when he was doing that, did you gasp or were you like, wow, this is cool?
I was like...
Go, Bruce, go.
Yeah, go, Bruce, go, because I was loving it, you know. And then he kind of... My idea at that time was it was a more sort of English vintage, and then his was more American and American Indian and things like that, all mixed in. And then there was the whole photographer culture of Edward Weston and all those people that were all inspirational to him, you know. And how they looked and how they lived their lives and how, you know. He introduced me to all that, and that was so fascinating to me.
Now, someone like him who has this great career, I mean, he's one of the, you know, I don't like this word. It's such a Trump word, but I'll use it now because we're in the age of Trump. All these top photographers. He's one of the top photographers in the business. Eventually, you know, all things must pass. Or does Bruce adapt? Does Bruce do his thing and stay, or does he adapt?
I think he's adapted, and it's kind of rolled over. And I've actually done two books. The one you have here is the most recent one, but I did one before. And in the one before, there was you see very much the older Bruce, and now here's the newer Bruce, where it is, you know, he does embrace celebrities without making them look like. Stand out. They just become part of the landscape in a way that is kind of interesting. His photography is about what's happening all around you, you know.
I like to think that we have a fairly sophisticated listenership, not just in New York, but beyond. And female, you know, I think men are less. But that's not true. I guess men more and more seek to inform themselves about clothes rather than have it passed on, like by my dad, which was, I think, was my point was that was very common then.
Yeah.
Taste in clothes was something you were instructed about rather than going out in the world and acquiring your own taste. And in that way that I have had people say, Simon Doonan, I say to him, what's the tip for women? And whatever his answer was, you know, bag, shoes, you know, jacket, or whatever the thing, you just spend the money on this and then fill it in with this. Do you have any such advice for women as to what to wear? What do you spend your money on? If their budget is somewhat limited?
Well, buy one thing that you absolutely love and you're going to wear more than once. So try to make something that's not too extreme, something that's buy something more expensive that's going to last, because if it's cheap, it's probably not going to last. I would rather buy one very expensive sweater than six cheap ones that are going to peel. You know?
Right. Well, if when you do retire, if the time comes that you retire, and if Anna decides to put you on the cover for your retirement, and you need an actor to be on the cover with you, just as that furniture, exactly. I will put the suit on. I will be your furniture, your arm candy behind you on your.
Well, that would be really good
on your au revoir cover.
I'm
just volunteering that now.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of yours,
well,
and I love September
Anna's
issue. Right. But thank you so much for doing this with us.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. It's fun.
Thank you.
when speaking at Grace Coddington's 70th birthday 5 years ago. Her longtime friend, colleague, and editor-in-chief of American Vogue, Anna Wintour, called her the, quote, heart and soul of the magazine, its guardian at the gate, its beacon of excellence, unquote. Learn more about Coddington's work in her most recent book, Grace, the American Vogue Years. This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing.